Shalom. Welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is the program of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians, and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this, all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and reach out to us at genesis123.co. Stay tuned until the end of the program, where we're going to share an exciting opportunity for you. And please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. Today, I'm super excited. I've literally just met today's guest face-to-face, figuratively, for the first time. We've been texting back and forth. She comes to this conversation with such an uplifting message, and I'm excited to get to know her, and I know you will be as well. It's also super timely because Ashley Bond, I'm actually getting emotional thinking about it, Ashley. Like you're one of Israel's Olympic athletes. You just finished competing this week. Unfortunately, and we'll talk about that, unfortunately, a little sooner than intended, and it's fascinating why that's the case as well. But this year especially, you know, it's not just a novelty to have a cool person who's one of Israel's Olympic athletes speaking, but this year especially in Paris, where we're 10 months into a war here in Israel, and that's impacting all Israelis all around the world, and Jews and Christians all around the world. And I say that specifically because of who you are and what we're going to get into, but also specifically the threats and the accommodations that need to be made this year for the Israeli Olympic team and even Israeli tourists who are going to cheer on all of our athletes. Ashley is born in America, like myself. She has an Israeli father, like myself, and took Israeli citizenship. Actually, it's very interesting that we're speaking today, because today is the 20th anniversary of me and my family making Aliyah. They all took citizenship, and I was a citizen from birth as well. But I'm excited to have you, and you're, I don't know a lot, but this has been your second Olympics representing Israel in equestrian competition, which is also unique. If I'm not mistaken, it's only the second time that Israel has had an equestrian team represented, three years ago in Tokyo and this year in Paris. So Ashley, there's a lot we're going to unpack and get to know. But really, first of all, thank you for taking the time today and welcome to Inspiration from Zion.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan. I'm so excited to be here and speak with you about all things, faith and Israel and in between. So let's get going.
Let's get going. So you live in the U.S. You were born in the U.S. Your father is also Israeli. He was born in Haifa, like my father, more than a generation. I guess I'm more than a generation older than you, so you could probably be one of my kids.
And, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, you probably think so. I think so. My father was born here in 1937, and I refer to him as an original Palestinian, because back in the day, it was only the Jews here in Israel who were referred to as Palestinians. And do you know where did your father grow up, just coincidentally?
He grew up in Haifa, and then he immigrated to the States when he was 12 with his mom.
It was 12. Okay. My father came to America when he was 17, hardly knowing a word of English.
Yeah.
And then that began my path until exactly 20 years ago today, coming back. At what point, I can speak about my own Israeli identity before coming here, but tell us about your father and your own identity here and what made you forget the competition. and being part of the Olympic team, wanting to become an Israeli?
Yeah, so my dad, obviously, my SOFTA immigrated actually from Hungary to fleeing the World War II, and they went to Italy. She met my grandfather there in Italy, had my uncle, and then immigrated to Israel from there and had my father in 53. And then she, yeah, took my dad when he was 12 and moved to the States. I think, you know, my dad became an actor. So he was originally born Shlomo Goldberg. And then it was changed to Steve Bond, which is funny. And then he ended up being in Los Angeles and, you know, obviously fast forward, met my mom, and she's, you know, born in Sacramento, California, totally, you know, from European descent, German, Swedish, and Christian, which he, I don't think they ever spoke about until they had been dating and living together, actually. And anyway, so I think my dad, obviously, his family was still in Israel, in Haifa, and when they had us, my brother's 6 years younger than me. You know, I think with being a Christian, Jesus being born in Israel and his whole life was in Israel, and I think that part of me, it was always a really deep connection. And my dad had become a, I don't know how you would phrase it, but a messianic Jew, I guess would
Okay.
be a
Okay.
term. He found the Lord on his own when he was in his late 20s, early 30s, like a couple years after my mom and him got together. And that's actually an incredible story on its own. But I think just having, you know, a really, like, he is a real Israeli, like his character, he's super strong and passionate and a fighter and the best heart, and just yeah, like just embodies, like, I think the core of like who Israeli people are, who Israelis are. And I definitely got a lot of that character. So I think in that way, when we would go, you know, to my cousins, who one of my cousins moved to the States. My dad's brother eventually had immigrated to the States, brought his family. So his daughter, you know, raised her family here in 30 minutes from where we grew up. And her brother actually stayed in Israel. So my cousin Oren is still there with his family. But Shelly is, you know, 30 minutes from us, and we would go for dinners and all the things, and, you know, the whole mishpucha. And I always felt like this is like who I am, you know, like I like identify with like the Israeli, like that mentality and that fight and for fierceness I always have. So on top of like Jesus being, you know, the reason that I love Israel so much, I also in my core feel like I just always identified as an Israeli American,
Yeah.
you know. So,
But
and my dad never taught me Hebrew, sadly. I always give him,
oh, me
you
too.
know, oh, I was so frustrated. I'm so annoyed with him about it, but it's fine.
Do you know how to
Yeah.
say horse in Hebrew?
Seuss.
Seuss, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, I know like a few words.
You can come here and my grandchildren will teach you all the other animals.
Great. It would be super. I'm really bad at
Okay.
it.
No, it's really funny that you say that. My father left Israel the year after your father was born. He was 17. He had an
Okay.
accent until he died,
Okay.
and but also was you could never take the Israeli out of him. The
Yeah.
first time I came here with him, I was a teenager, and that's when I decided I wanted to live here. But for me, I saw him. That was in the 80s. He hadn't been here in over 20 years, but it was like a homecoming. This is where he belonged. And he went back to his old neighborhood in Haifa and saw some of his neighbors, reunited with his childhood best friend, who I became friendly with, their family. So, yeah, it's interesting that you say that. And also impressive because your father was that much younger than my father. He was only 12.
Yeah.
And you can lose a lot of cultural identity when you move at any age.
Yeah. No, he
Amazing.
definitely didn't lose any of that. He's He's a Israeli through and through, and I love that about him. And I definitely get what you're saying. When you go to Israel, I just even feel when you're flying in, you feel, sorry, my daughter's okay. When I feel like as you fly into Israel, you get this like, I get this like emotional like feeling of just the presence of the Holy Spirit. It's really incredible. I haven't been in the last 2 years, or I went right before, so it's been 3 years. I went right before the last games. And we would have gone again had obviously the war, it's, everything going on. But yeah, it's just so spiritual for me. Every time I go there, it's overwhelming, actually. So yeah,
Which
I
you
love
have
it.
a double dose of as an Israeli, as someone whose father was not just born here, but who has family here, and obviously you're in touch with them. But even you use the Yiddish version of the Hebrew word mishpacha, which is family. You're talking about, but also as a Christian. And I just had a friend who left here. It was only her second visit, and she refers to Israel as her spiritual homeland, even though she wasn't born here. And so you have that double dose. Let me ask you about that, because you've already tipped the one of the super unique things about having you here. You are a Christian, and I'm guessing, I didn't research it, but you probably know this. Are you the first and perhaps only Christian who's ever represented Israel in the Olympics? That's amazing.
I mean, in our sport, I don't know about in all the sports. I know for sure in our sport, because every one of my teammates made Aliyah. I know, but yeah, it would be an interesting thing to see if in every sport for Israel, if I'm the first Christian Israeli. I would hope not, but I maybe.
Well, there's so few Christians here that it's actually probable. I asked my son, my youngest, who loves soccer, and at the beginning, when Israel was still before being eliminated, we went relatively far in whatever division that we were in. I asked if any Israeli Arabs were part of the team, which is not improbable, because they're 1 in 5 of us are Arabs here, and many are really, really good at soccer. And he didn't know the answer, and we didn't continue the conversation. But among Israelis, about 10 million of us, there's a very, very small number who are Christians. So you might be. We'll have to check that out. But I'm gonna, for the moment, I'm gonna go with it.
Perfect. I like being the first.
How did you come to faith? I mean, it's a fascinating story in terms of your parents, but what about you and yourself?
I think I was really blessed, or I feel really blessed, and I'll definitely get emotional through this whole thing because every time I talk about the Lord and my faith, I do. But I just knew as a young child, before I can even remember, I mean, I just had this overwhelming certainty that Jesus was who he said he was, and he was my father. And I believe, I have a funny story about one of my best friends. She's Jewish, and we went to school. We were best friends since we were like 3 or 4 years old. And I think when I was 5, 6, maybe 7 at the oldest, I told her, I was like, I can't be your friend if you don't believe in Jesus. Like
Wow.
I was really just new, and was gonna push that as a young kid. Obviously, you're like, I'm gonna push that on you. You need to know Jesus, And I sent her home in an I Love Baby Jesus t-shirt one time, and her mom is Jewish, and she was like, opened the door, was like, what are you wearing? Like, funny, little kid, like you don't know, but I just, yeah, my mom also was blessed with that. And we've had like supernatural experiences, each of us actually in our family, which is really, really special. Her father was also a really strong believer from the time he was born. And then my dad came to it on his own, randomly, actually. Well, not randomly, because my mom had been praying for him every day since they got together, but never said anything. And then 2 years in, he knew, he was in acting class, and Miguel Ferrer, actually, he said, can I go to church with you? And my dad was very angry, had a lot of stuff go on in his childhood that caused a lot of issues. He was an alcoholic and all these things. And he's now like sober for over 10 years and it's amazing. But he had asked Miguel if he could go to church with him, and Miguel was like, sure. And I guess when they were there, they asked if anyone wanted to accept the Lord, and he was like, my hand just started to raise. And then he ended up accepting Jesus, and he came home and was like, I need to talk to my mom. He's like, I need to talk to you. I don't know how you're going to take this. And she was like, okay. And he's like, well, I went to church today and I accepted Jesus into my heart. And she started crying
Yeah, I'll bet.
and was like, I've been praying for you every day. So sorry.
No, that's good. I
Yeah.
appreciate the
So
emotion and I
it's,
appreciate the honesty.
yeah. So it's really, it's beautiful. And, definitely the Lord has been had his hand on our family. My mom, you know, she's makes movies in the, you know, in Hollywood, and pioneered the whole faith-based Christian side of the film industry, and has, you know, brought hopefully a lot of people to the Lord. So you know, it's been really cool. And then my brother had the opposite experience for me. You know, he believed and had really strong faith, and then he lost it and just recently has come back around to his faith, which is beautiful as well. But that's a huge other story. So
So let me ask you a question.
but
Using an equestrian metaphor, being a Christian on the Israeli Olympic team, has there been a hurdle for you? You like that?
Definitely I've felt it, not from my teammates so much, but just you know, from, well, other aspects, I guess you could say, where in the beginning it was the Jewish team. You know, they would phrase it as we're riding on the Jewish team, and I always felt like, well, not everyone who's an Israeli is Jewish, and I'm one of the higher ranked riders on the team, and has you know, won a lot for Israel. So I felt a little like a bit of an outcast at times, but I think in the last while I felt like more embraced and more, not that I wasn't accepted, but more like we just don't talk about that, you know, kind of thing. But now I feel like empowered that I am accepted by the Jewish Israelis that are on my team, and the people that are around our team, and I don't have to be ashamed to share, you know, my faith if called upon to do it. Whereas at the last games, I felt like I wasn't allowed to really do that. So yeah, I mean, it definitely, maybe it's more of an internal struggle, and maybe I'm putting a lot of that on myself that wasn't there, but I think I'm pretty good at reading situations and like the
Yeah.
vibe, and that was the vibe that I had gotten for a while.
Well, it could be a combination of the both. I'm glad to hear the evolution of that, but the combination of the both, your own feeling, but also how Israelis respond. And even if it's not in a negative way, because there are so few Christians here, most Israelis don't even know Christians, don't interact with
Yeah.
Christians. One at the beginning of the war, I know I'm not fast forwarding, but to relate a story, we were involved through our Israel Emergency Campaign in relocating almost a whole community near the Gaza border to a hotel in
Wow.
Jerusalem. And through generosity of Jews and Christians all over the world, we paid for about a month for them to stay in
Wow.
a hotel. And these are all hardcore Middle Eastern Israeli Jews who never met Christians before, but when
Wow.
told, they could have come with it with a negative stereotype, but when told that most of the donors that paid for them to be able to stay with their kids and grandchildren in the hotel for a month were Christian, they were overwhelmed with support and it didn't have to go that way. So
Yeah.
it's a gradual breaking down. I was having that conversation with someone else recently as well. Actually, I want to continue this, but I want to take a really, really quick break. And
Yeah.
then come back and pick up and then specifically talk about your experiences in Paris. Okay, let's just take a quick break.
As remarkable and miraculous as Israel is, and its very existence a testimony to God's faithfulness, in many ways, Israel's like most other countries. Just as there are parents anywhere who have stronger and weaker parenting abilities, and adults become a product of situations in their lives that they cannot control, making their ability to raise and care for their own children even harder. That's true in Israel as well. The Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation is committed and takes the mandate seriously to care for the least of these, our brothers, our children. We're committed to bless and strengthen orphans and at-risk youth, to invest in them, to empower them, so that their future will be brighter than their past or their present. But Israel is unique in that there are always threats of war and terror which know no bounds. For children who come from homes that are not safe, sometimes the very scary reality of living in a community that's not safe is too much to bear. We are committed to turning orphans and at-risk youth into children of promise. We fund a variety of programs to help those most in need as widely as we can. We invite and encourage you to join us today so that we can ensure their brighter tomorrow. Please visit genesis123.co to find out more and to send your love and most generous donation today.
What? Well, actually, you know what? I'm looking at some notes that I jotted down, but this is a really interesting one that just came to mind. What, in your experience being on the Olympic team, have you learned about Israelis in general and Jews in specific?
I just feel like everyone's like a family. I feel like there's just this, you're Israeli and you're in. Like, you know, at least from when I've been at the games, you know, the whole Israeli delegation was just so welcoming and warm, and exactly how I know my family in Israel to be, my family that immigrated from Israel to be, like I said, the mishpucha, because my Savta spoke Yiddish. And so
Savta, by the way, is grandmother. I was going to say that before.
Yeah.
Some people don't know that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no. She passed when I was 13. Sorry. Still emotional. Yeah. She would be really proud. Sorry.
She would be. She'd be pinching your cheeks and saying stuff.
I know. I know. I did. I also felt that was also a reason that I wanted to represent Israel. She loved Israel so much. Yeah. Anyway, told you the whole emotional thing. It just never stops when speaking about Israel and family and faith and all of that. But yeah, just very, very welcoming, like a big family. And it's really, I just feel at peace when I'm there.
Over and above your own coming to faith, when did you, can you point back to a specific time or incident where you actually had that feeling of really feeling like you were Israeli even before you took citizenship?
I think because my Savta was there with me since the day I was born, and she would be over like 3 times a week and pick me up from school, you know, a couple times a week and stuff like that. I just always felt that way. Like, I always felt that I was Israeli, and I had that in my house, you know, since the day I was born until I was 13 or 14, she passed. And she was like a really big influence in my life.
What so, food did she cook that you loved?
Oh, I still make her food. Schnitzel, Israeli salad. She did palanchintas, which actually probably comes from her Hungarian background, but also the grilled peppers that I do on the, and then you grill the peppers and then you soak them in the olive oil and vinegar and garlic. That the stuffed cabbage was one of my favorite things she would make. latkes, she would do great. And she had this amazing recipe for chicken soup that my mom and I still make all of these recipes.
Amazing. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's so cool.
Yeah. It's really good. And my dad loves the potato salad she made, and my mom still makes, because my mom is a really good cook. And fortunately, I got that gene. So we can make some good food.
How great.
Yeah.
So now, as an Israeli, this year, you're getting ready to come to Paris to compete. I want to talk about what went on there, but you experienced something that Israelis in general and Jews in specific have been experiencing, well, from the beginning. Hatred, anti-Semitism, and of course the irony is that you're not even Jewish. Tell us about that. What happened, and how did that? Well, I'd like to unpack whatever you're able to tell in terms of how that affected the Israeli team this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm honored to have been able to experience everything my, you know, fellow Jewish Israeli teammates were, because I want to be in it with them. And I got a letter from a hate group, terrorist group, before I came to Paris, pretty much threatening my life, threatening, you know, if I step out of an airplane to France or walk on the streets, they run the streets and run all of it, and blood will run through the streets, just like in Munich, and named me personally. So me and I believe 14 or 16 other Israelis got that letter, and then a few got like their obituary sent to them. So that was definitely eye-opening, and I had to really just pray and rely on my faith to, you know, keep me strong. I am a strong person, but I've never dealt with something like that, so it definitely tested my personal strength. The security that we had the minute I got into France, we were with armed guards all day, every day. We could only go from the venue to the village. In the Olympic Village, it actually felt, I didn't know what to expect, to be honest, because we had had a meeting a month or so before the games with a psychologist preparing us for what could happen. And, you know, if we, you know, get confronted by other athletes or whatever, we need to, you know, take the high road and all the things. And so I was prepared for people to be spitting on us and yelling at us and all of these things. And I have to tell you, it was the complete opposite. I don't know if it was because of our sport or what, but in the village, I never once had any negative experience. I actually had very positive experiences, people trading pins with us. Outside of the village, the minute we would walk, like if we were leaving the village to go to the venue, our guards were there waiting for us in our compound, which was a compound. We didn't have any Israeli flags on the building we were staying in. You needed a code to get in to our building. I mean, like bars, like you're in a prison.
And that code was only to get for in. Israelis?
Only Israelis. Everyone else was normal.
That's sick. I mean, that's it's great, but it's sick.
It's sick. So we had to go through, so code to get into the locked area, and then turn left, you go again, a door that you have to be buzzed into. And again, you go through facial recognition. Once you get through that, you go through a body scanner. And then there's the guard sitting with video screens, because there's cameras literally on every street around our entire building that they're watching 24/7. And then you go in through a small, like little, you turn left and the elevator's right there. So it was highly secured, like nobody was getting in there. And then our building that they put us in had like the metal, like we had a balcony, but to close the windows, like you had normal doors, but then you had metal, like if you wanted, you didn't have to, but you had like metal enclosures as well, to just fully be closed in. And then the minute we stepped out of the Olympic Village, we had obviously all of our guards. We would ride the bus because we had our specific equestrian, like each discipline, each sport has their own bus to go to the venue. So our guards, two or three of them would ride on the bus with us. And then we had police escorts that would always follow us or be in front of us as well as behind us, with their sirens and all the things. The minute we got to the horse venue, we were shadowed the whole time with between 5 to 6 body armed security guards all day, every day.
That's
follow us to the bathroom.
So yeah. The security team was arguably many times larger than the Olympic team itself.
Yeah, there's four of us, and there was no less than five security guards with us all day, every day.
Wow. Did you feel, I mean, it's wonderful to say that you were in the Olympic Village and you didn't have any negative experiences, and you're visually identified as Israeli, and sharing the pins is a really great example of how people were receptive. But did you feel unsafe any time at all, or concerned? Did you have to actively get that out of your mind as you were going in to compete?
No, actually, that was another part I think I skipped over. But in the village, I felt like all the athletes, like I didn't have the feeling of being unsafe. And in the village, we weren't shadowed. I mean, maybe we were, and we were told that we just won't notice them. So very possible that our Mossad agents were there and I just didn't notice. But in the village, I felt extremely safe. We walked around like normal. At least it felt that way. Outside of the village, obviously not. But when I went to compete in the ring for the first time on day one for the team, I was expecting, because the stands were completely full. I mean, there was, I don't know, 40,000, 50,000 people there.
Yeah.
It was full. I was expecting boos because they said to expect it. When they announced my name, I think the whole stands erupted in applause and cheering.
That's great.
And Israeli flags. And I got emotional. Like, even before I started jumping, I got emotional. And I had a really good round. And we made it into the finals. And when I finished my round, people cheering. Like, it was, there wasn't one negative. And then when I went, because my family, I couldn't see my family in the venue because they didn't have accreditations. My parents did. My husband and my daughter didn't. So, and my sponsor, who's one of my sponsors, she's Israeli. Hilla and Ellie, they're Israeli, and they had come as well. So I had to go out of like the secured area to the general public where all the people that were watching were. And I asked the security if that was okay. And he was like, yeah, but just stay close to me because we didn't know what to expect. And I was going out with like thousands of people. And I have to tell you, I was being bombarded by people wanting to take my picture and shake my hand and congratulate me. And it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. And it just inspired me and just made me feel like, you know, there are haters, obviously. There are the, you know, the misinformed people in the States that think free Palestine from the river to the sea is what they should be backing, which to me is just very sad. Because they're very uneducated, or they've been, you know, brainwashed by the propaganda. But the majority of the people I think are with us. I just think the people that are against us are very loud. I think there's not as many as are for us, but I think they're just very loud. So I was really blown away by the support we had.
In Tokyo, what you're describing specifically in terms of the building and the compound, not just the physical security people, but a lot of preparation went into that. It wasn't,
yeah,
it certainly wasn't like Munich where they just happened to put a bunch of Israelis in an apartment together. Did you have in Tokyo similar kinds of security, or was this on steroids?
Yes and no. So this was definitely way more. Tokyo, I think because of COVID, everyone was kind of locked down to begin with, but we were in a building with other teams in Tokyo. So they did have facial recognition, but it didn't happen until we hit. So they stopped the elevator three floors below where we were all living. So the bottom floor, like I think we were on floors 12 or something. So at 11, you'd have to get off. And then 12, 13, 14, or whatever it was, the three floors above that floor were all the Israeli athletes. And they locked the elevators so nobody could get to our floors. When you got off at floor 11, I would say, you had to go through facial recognition, one, and then there was a guard sitting there, and that was it. And you didn't get, they had like little tracking things that you could take when you were going outside the village so that they knew where you were at all times, but you didn't have to. And we didn't have armed guards like we did, nothing like that. I was pretty free compared to like everyone else. Like we were kind of all in the same boat. We were a little more, you know, watched, but it wasn't anything like what we dealt with this time.
You alluded a little bit. I mean, I guess the word is maybe it's not political, but to the to those the Israel haters, and that they're misinformed. What's your message to them? What if someone's watching or somebody who doesn't know, but just think Ashley's a really cool, novel woman who's a great athlete and blessed in so many ways. But what's your message to for people to understand what's the reality?
I think I'm one of those people that I don't watch the mainstream news because I believe they're all corrupt and they're all corrupt and pretty much owned by the same, like both sides. I'm neither Democrat or Republican. I'm a conservative person at heart, but I'm an independent, a moderate, like, you know, so I really just think that there's an agenda, like because of my faith, it's good versus evil. It's the devil versus God and Jesus. And it is so obvious these days, unless you have scales over your eyes, which a lot of people do, sadly. But I think that the media pushes what they want people to believe and they don't see the truth of what's really going on. I would say read the Bible, because Israel has been around for thousands and thousands of years and the promised land to the Jews for, you know, so long, since the 40 years in the desert and all of the things. So the whole, you know, that Israel just came about not that long ago is just not factual. I also feel that if you really look at Israel, they have Arabs and Palestinians and Muslims and Christians and everyone. It's a melting pot and they all coexist together. And the Arabs hold positions of power in government in Israel. They're not ethnically cleansing. I've heard this term about them ethnically cleansing Gaza and Palestine and all of these things. And I'm just, it's not the case. The problem is not the Palestinians versus the Jews or the Israelis. It's the terrorist organizations.
Excellent.
Against the Jews and actually everybody. I don't remember who said it, but Israel's just the beginning. Like, they don't want to stop at Israel. They want to come for America. They want to come for any country that isn't Muslim and isn't them. And they want to eradicate us. And another, you know, quote I'd heard from someone a few times is, you know, if they gave up the hostages and laid down their arms, like, there would be peace. If the Jews did that, they would literally slaughter all of the Israelis. Like, it just, people don't understand that it's something that they're ingrained, like, they teach this. They teach to hate, you know, the radicals. I'm not talking about, you know, Muslims and Arabs that aren't radicalized, but the radicals who are backed by billionaires in Iran and, you know, these terrible people, it's a smaller group, but they are very powerful.
Yeah.
And they want death to Christians and Jews and all of people who aren't them. And because Israel is God's country, that is why Israel is so wanted, because they want to kill God. They want to kill Jesus. It's just a spiritual warfare. That's when people are like, why is this happening? I was like, because it's spiritual. It's simple in my eyes, because it's between the devil and God, and the devil rules the earth right now. And that's just the way it is until Jesus comes back. But when people don't believe that, it's, you know, they think like, you know, why is this happening? And all of these things. And it's, you know, it's sad. I look at it and it's very sad for me, because I love all of them. Like, nobody's sitting here going, I want Palestinians to be hurt, or I want the Jews to be hurt. Like, it would be beautiful if we could all just realize who our common enemy is and try to take that person out, you know, or that group out together.
Well, I shared with you before we went on, right? Late last week before Shabbat, I guess, or maybe whenever we were chatting, I shared with you my peace plan, which is basically that.
It's beautiful. I love it. And with, you know, obviously with God, all things are possible.
Correct.
And I believe that to my core. Right. So I think your plan is a great plan, and I hope it can happen if it's meant to happen.
That will be a cliffhanger for our next segment, because we're going to take a break. And then anyone who wants to know more about the Solution for Peace in Gaza can go to the website solutionforpeaceingaza.com. But let's take another quick break before we begin to wrap up, Ashley.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better. Much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire, and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
Okay, wow, Ashley, there's so much. I feel like we're old friends.
Yeah, it's great.
And I'm really enjoying this. I look forward to doing this in person one day. And I have to say, I didn't mention our mutual friend. I'm always careful on people's privacy, but our mutual friend Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa,
who introduced us. So shout out and thanks to Melissa for that.
She's awesome.
She is. Actually, so it's funny, the friend who was just here, who I alluded to, speaking of Israel as her spiritual homeland, is our mutual friend Marzi, who maybe you've heard of. She was born in Iran, became a Christian in Iran.
Oh, I love that.
And was sentenced to death because became a Christian. And she was just here because we're working on a really cool project to bring Christians to participate in the olive harvest this fall.
That's beautiful.
Symbolic, economically, because so much of the agricultural industry has been damaged because of the war, but also not spiritually. Spiritually, yes. Symbolically, because here I am, Jonathan, the Orthodox Jew, quoting Romans 11, but talking about the significance of the root supporting the branch, and the root and the tree that is spoken of is the olive tree, and everything, and all the oil for anointing, and everything that we're talking about biblically is olive oil. So we're going to be big things. And Melissa, it's funny how these things come together.
Yeah. When is that? When is the olive? What was it called again?
Well, our program is called properly Root and Branch.
Right.
And the olive harvest in Israel is in the fall. And we are waiting on, as I speak to you, by the time this comes out, we'll have a lot more details. And in fact, Saturday night, Israel time, we're going to be doing a briefing about the plans are.
Do you know when it is?
The last week of October, first week of November. You want to come pick olives with your daughter?
I actually would love to do that. I think I let me check my show schedule, but I think I might be not competing.
That would be great.
And if I could, I would love to come.
Great. Actually, you just went to an area that I want to potentially finish with
Oh,
about
okay.
what,
Sorry.
no, it's good, about what's next. But
Yeah.
and I didn't even expect to go. I kind of think about where I want to go with these conversations, but they're totally not scripted. But when I asked you in terms of what you want people to know, this week, it's heartbreaking for me. It's so hard. 10 months, we're 10 months into war. Tomorrow,
yeah.
as we have this conversation, Ariel Bibas, who is turning 5 years old, he's the big one of the two redhead boys that were kidnapped.
Yeah.
And a week and a half ago, I stood in front of their house with all of their toys, exactly as they, and you have a little child as well. You
yeah.
can relate. All of their toys on the front lawn, just like they were when they're,
Ugh,
when they
that's
were
so
all
sad.
Kidnapped 10 months ago. It's just so heartbreaking. And now you're in Paris with the rest of the Israeli team, having to deal with security issues that no one's ever dealt with in history. Forget that you're the first, I've dubbed you the first Israeli Christian to compete, but also imminently waiting for some mega attack, which I've referred to. I told you right before we began speaking that I'm writing an article that'll be out soon called Armageddon Notwithstanding.
Yeah.
What's impacted you, Ashley, Christian Israeli, Olympian or not, in the last 10 months with the war?
Oof. Just how fallen our world is. I think it's just so heartbreaking that people can do the things that they can do, but then I just turn it back and go, they're not, they're demons. Like, people might think I'm crazy, but I believe in my faith 110%, and I believe that it's all demonic. And, you know, if the original sin hadn't happened, this would not be happening, you know, kind of thing. And I just have to keep believing that, you know, God will, you know, provide, and he will, you know, either allow, you know, what's happening to happen for a greater purpose, or save, you know, intervene. I don't know, but I just feel like it's very testing of your faith, what's happened in the last 10 months. And I think as Israelis, they're the strongest people I've ever seen. And it's brought them together, maybe. I don't know. It's just really hard to wrap my head around everything that's happened since October 7th. It's, and what it's means to me to be able to at least bring a little bit of hope and, I don't know, hope and strength, I guess.
As much as any Israelis are okay. I do a lot of media interviews and I just say we're all traumatized. And these are traumas that will stay with us for the rest of our lives, mine and even, I believe, my grandchildren.
Yeah, it's like the Holocaust. I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing. I think about how we're in the 21st century and we're dealing with this kind of anti-Semitism and hatred, and I don't know. I don't know how, on one hand, people can be saying, you know, we have to be so accepting of all of these things and include everybody and love, and then have the same people turning around and spewing hatred and from the river to the sea and all of these horrible things. And it just doesn't go together. It's traumatizing.
October 7th and the war that's ensued and 1,200 people, not just killed, but massacred and in inhuman ways.
Brutalized.
Right. In human ways. And you used the word before, and it's correct. Demonic. It is. Plus the fact that we still have 115 hostages, eight of whom are American. Some are alive. Some are not alive.
How America hasn't come, I just, like, that to me is just mind-blowing. We're supposed to be allies.
I want you to go further with that, but I also wanted to ask you, so I don't forget, we live it. You know, this is part of being an Israeli in Israel, and it affects Israelis overseas. Of course it does. You have family here, but I'd love for you to also talk about what, not just the, let's talk a bit about America's support for Israel, but also how, on a scale of 1 to 10, how shocked you are to see the anti-Semitism erupting in the U.S. specifically.
I mean, I would say I'm shocked, but not, because again, I think that it's just setting the stage for what's to come in the end times. Like, that's so, yes, I'm shocked that it's so in our faces. Like, but then on the other flip side, I'm not really shocked by anything that the devil can bring out. I'm also really disappointed in America's response, because we're supposed to be a huge ally to Israel. And I feel like they're not really, they're saying it, but they're not backing their words up with action.
Unpack that. Give me some examples.
Well, I think this administration, that's a whole different story. But I think this administration says one thing, but then, you know, Kamala Harris's daughter is raised $8 million for a terrorist organization, I believe. I don't know if it was
to
Hamas.
Give her credit, it's a stepdaughter. They're not
stepdaughter. Sorry. Yes. But you know, I think it's, how can you have, you know, your stepchild raising money for the killing of Jews and then be supporting Israel? And we feel like that's the person that's going to keep Israel safe. Like, I just don't understand how that can go hand in hand. I feel like they're kind of, maybe they want it that way. Maybe that's their big agenda, is they want Israel to go down too. So it'd be nice to get someone in there that actually will make sure Israel stays safe.
Okay, so we need to have a conversation on U.S. politics before November 5th, but we'll come back to that. Is there any one thing in the course of the last 10 months that just stands out as that red flag for you in terms of America's lack of response and support of Israel?
Yeah, that we still have hostages there. Like, that they still, how do we have hostages there still? And 5 Americans. That's unbelievable to me. It's infuriating, actually. Yeah. It's disgusting. It makes me so angry.
I'm glad you picked that one. That wasn't even where I would think of going, but I'm glad you picked that one, because that's not even something that you can say that was done or articulated that was wrong. It's a lack of fortitude. And I read, and it's true, if the U.S. had truly wanted all of the hostages free and put its money where its mouth is, the United States has the influence with Qatar to say there will be severe consequences for you as a country, and it won't be Israel taking out the terrorists that are living in 7-star hotels in Qatar, but it'll be the U.S. Excellent. I'm glad you mentioned that.
I think people try to make it more complicated too. I think for me, it's very simple. Yeah. And I go back to the whole demonic everything. It's not a joke. I mean, I laugh because it's like, I'm saying it again, you know, but I believe it in my gut that it's just demons. They're just freaking, That's their plan, is to blow up the world, pretty much.
Well, thank you. You know, it may sound condescending, and it's certainly not coming from that, but I'm so proud to have you as a fellow Israeli.
Thank you.
So grateful, really.
No, it's not condescending at all. I'm honored. I love Israel. I love the people of Israel. I have Jewish blood in me. Like, I'm not, I don't consider myself not Jewish. I'm just half Jewish, you know, and I'm a Christian Jew, Israeli. So I feel like also, I think hopefully the Jewish Israelis realize that us as Christians, even if we're not Israeli Christians, we are so behind Israel. Like, that is our hometown. Like, that is our home, like our faith, spiritual home. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, it is. I never feel closer to the Lord than when I am in Israel, like ever. And I cannot wait to go back and obviously see my family, who, God willing, stays safe. And two of my cousins are in, you know,
I wanted to ask you about
the
your
army.
Family.
So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And they're amazing. They're wonderful people. And, they're fighters, and I can't wait to go back, and hopefully I can go back for the olive harvest. Yeah.
So other than participating in the Root and Branch project in October, what are Ashley Bond's plans coming up? We didn't even talk about it. So the Israel team, which is silly of me, Team Israel finished in ninth place, which is a really good showing, but you had to step out of the individual competition. You were sharing with me right before we started recording. How come that happened?
You know, my horse and I did the last Olympics in Tokyo. We had an amazing showing. We were 11th individually. He owes me absolutely nothing. I've had him since he was 6 years old. He's 13. He jumped the first day like a rock star. We helped the team get to the finals, which was something none of us expected. A huge accomplishment. Since the last games, we didn't even finish as a team, and it's only our second Olympics ever as a team. So to beat teams like Switzerland and Spain and Mexico and all of these teams that have been around for over 100 years is really a huge accomplishment. My horse, the second day, took a really bad stumble after fence 9 behind, and then he proceeded to not jump like he usually does. He was jumping to the right. I completed the course. I took him out. He trotted sound. He wasn't limping or anything, but I was very, very concerned. And I just felt as though there was no reason to put him through any more of these big jumps, because it is not just big jumping. It's the biggest jumping we will ever see outside of like a World Equestrian Games, European Championships, or an Olympics. So I just felt it was in the best interest of my horse to not do it. He has nothing to prove. I still have things to prove for myself down the road and for Israel. I would love, you know, for the team to win a medal for Israel. That is our goal.
Yeah.
Hopefully in LA or, you know, Australia or something. But I think with how amazing our jump was from the last Olympics to this Olympics, it's very plausible that we could then jump onto that podium for the next one. So, and it's in my hometown in Los Angeles. So that would be even more fitting. And I always want to put my horse first. I mean, they don't have a voice. We have to be their voice. And everything he was telling me was that I've had enough. So, you know, fortunately we had a fourth person there, Isabella Rusikoff. So she'll get to jump the individual
and I'll
be cheering on. Yeah. And Daniel Blumen and Robin Muir will be jumping, individually. So it's still exciting and I will be rooting for them.
Amazing. And this is the only sport, right, that you have to worry about another living being. And that, in this case, a horse, and how they're doing well, because I suppose on all other teams, there's an alternate. There's someone else, another person who can step in if in the relay one isn't well or something like
that. Yeah, we still have an alternate, but it's a horse rider alternate. So it's the same, but not just human.
And in Los Angeles, because I know nothing about horses, in Los Angeles, your horse is 6 now. Will your horse be still eligible?
Oh, no. He was 6. He's 13 now.
Oh, 13.
So when I got him, he was six.
Okay.
So he won't do another Olympics or championship. Okay. Like I'll just do him in, you know, obviously the step lowers the 5-star competitions, which is still huge and all the things. I have an amazing 8-year-old that my goal is for the next championships and hopefully for LA. But it is a long time between then and now. So we'll see. But I do I do think he is the one for that.
It's so fascinating to me, Ashley. I never wasn't even on my radar. And of course, until 3 years ago, nor was there an Israeli Olympic team, but really fascinating. I'm super excited to have connected with you and let you share to the whole world as you are proudly waving the blue and white flag as you do. And I'm super grateful. Wow. To Melissa,
thank
to you,
you
for making time.
Yes.
And we'll continue to pray for just bigger and better things. Before I do my wrap up, is there anything that's on your heart that or that we didn't cover that you just want to share with everybody?
No, I mean, we covered a lot, which was beautiful. And I love that. I think just praying for obviously the release of the hostages and for their families and for some peace and understanding, maybe. That people, the scales fall from their eyes and they can see Israel for actually what it really is and for the terrorist organizations for what they really are and realize that this is not a battle between, you know, Gaza or Palestinians and Israelis, that it's a battle between, you know, these sick terrorists and everybody else so that we can all come together and, you know, try to just put this, you know, put this away, put this to bed, get this, make this be, you know, or heal it actually is what I was thinking. And and come together and just realize that love should conquer all at the end of the day with the Lord. And that's what I pray for.
You may not live here, but just simply from that answer, you're clearly inseparably one of us. And I'm so grateful and proud.
Thank you, Ashley,
for making time today. I always wrap up in a somewhat of a self-deprecating way, telling people that if they stay with us, I got to change this line because it's not true, but that they deserve reward. Our conversation is a reward enough. But beginning a year ago, we adapted our program, which I refer to as From Jonathan's Bookshelf, encouraging people to like and make comment and share the link to this program and all the inspiration from Zion episodes. And up until a year ago, for 2.5 years, we had always offered some other book. I'm looking at my bookshelf and all the great books about Israel and Judaism that I read and sharing those. But a year ago, I don't even think I shared it with you, Ashley. We, the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation, published our own book called Israel, the Miracle, 75 essays by Christian leaders from all over the world as a coffee table book. So it's stunning and it's inspiring. And for the last year, we've been offering a free copy, $75 value, to anyone who comments, likes, and shares the episode for this program. So I'm encouraging everyone to please go ahead and do
that. That's beautiful.
And I also always am grateful for our friends who sponsor the program, the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia, and tell people if you're ever driving through Culpeper, Virginia, definitely pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also our friends, the Coyne family. Like all of our programs, Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So I always want to encourage people to please consider joining us and help continue build bridges. And I want to just dedicate this episode in honor of our friend Melissa, who's so great. And
she is.
And just for opening this door and being the connector that she is, and so much that she does also behind the scenes. And if you or anyone else in the future watching or listening would like to sponsor a future episode in honor of their angel or a memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We always love to hear your comments as part of a dialogue, especially about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. So you can be in touch here. And finally, again, please share this program with others who will also find it of interest, and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. I pray that you and your loved ones are safe and healthy wherever you are in the world, and send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.
God bless you. Hallelujah.